There's a joke that I ran across this week that I just liked about an elementary school. A teacher was going to do a study or a section on world religions, and so she asked all of her students to bring in something that reminded them or something of their tradition of an object, you know, that would go along with their religion. So a few days later, the day came for show and tell, and as they arrived in the class, various students had all sorts of stuff, and one little girl raised her hand when the time came, and she wanted to go first. And so the teacher brought her up to the front, and she proudly displayed a rosary. And she said, "My family is Catholic, and this is a rosary, and it helps us with our prayers." And the teacher's like, "Well, that's really neat." And so that little girl went down, and a little boy raised his hand. I want to go. And so he came up with a candelabra in his hand. And he puts it up on the teacher's desk and said, "This is a menorah. My family is Jewish. And during Hanukkah, we light one of the candles every day of the week to remind us of God's blessings to us." Well, he sat down, and another little girl came up, and she was all excited, and she said, "I'm so excited. My family is Christian, and this is a casserole dish." Some of you got that. Good. Maybe you didn't get that if you haven't been around the evangelical church for a while. It doesn't matter whether you're Baptist, Nazarene, Methodist, Free Methodist. In the evangelical world, I think a casserole dish really does represent the church because we like to eat. And as I was thinking about this, you know what? Eating isn't that bad of a thing. In fact, most of my memories, my best memories, are centered around food, whether it be memories at home or memories at church or family gatherings. It seems like that food was a central part of those memories. Is that true for anybody else? If you get together at a reunion or what, food always seems to be there. When we were pastoring back in Oakdale, Minnesota, we started a Liberian congregation. They were ministering to the congregation was ministering to Liberian refugees. And when Michelle and I first started working with this group of people, they met on Sunday afternoons. They tried to limit their time to an hour. It seldom ever happened, and they never started on time. But they would every now and then eat. And I tell you what, when Africans eat, number one, it's really weird food, but once you figure out what's good and what's not, they bring the food by the truckloads. And so every time they had a meal, which was at least once a month, they would just fill our entire basement with food. Food, eating, and Christianity seems to go so hand in hand. Well, in the early days of the church, food was a very central thing with them as well. In fact, one of the rites, the biggest right that Jesus gave to us was centered on food, and we now call that what? Communion, the Lord's Supper. It's centered on food. So even with Jesus, eating was a big deal. Now, while eating was central to the church, it wasn't eating just for the sake of eating. As we'll see later on as we're going to walk through this, it was a primary means by which Jesus grew his own ministry and a primary means at which the church exploded and expanded in their day and age. Eating with intention. Eating in such a way that we can bring glory to God and share the joy of Jesus Christ with others around the dinner table. So right at the outset today, I want to ask you a question that we're going to pursue throughout the rest of the sermon. Who is at your table? I want you to think about this last week. In fact, a little bit later, I'm going to give you a little bit of time to write that down. Who was at your table this last week? Who did you eat with? Every day we eat. And every day we eat with people. People are sitting around our tables. And this was a huge piece of Jesus' ministry. In fact, it's sort of interesting to look at some of the people that Jesus ate with. Some of them actually surprised me. So here's the simple challenge. From here until Easter, I want to challenge you that every week you eat with three people that's not in your immediate family, one of which of those people is not a churchgoer. They're not a Christian as far as you know. So eat with three people intentionally every week, one of which doesn't go to church as far as you know. Dear Heavenly Father, as we walk into this morning, I pray you'll open our hearts and our eyes to look at something I don't think we talk a lot about in the church, but we do a lot of it, and that's eating. And Jesus, you like to eat. And I would even go to say you like to party. And so help us to see this side of you. Help us to learn a little bit about the way you did ministry in your world. And Father, help us to maybe emulate it in our world today, in our modern culture. Thank you for these thoughts. Thank you for your word that leads us to these truths. Amen. English pastor and author Tim Chester once posed the question, how would you complete this following sentence? The Son of Man came, ... How would you finish that sentence? Biblically, how would you finish that sentence? There's three ways that basically you can finish that sentence, two of which I think come to our mind, one of which maybe not. If you look at the scriptures, it says, the Son of Man came not to serve but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. You find that in Mark chapter 10, verse 45. The second way, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost, Luke 19:10. But here's a third way that you can finish that sentence. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, Luke 7:34. And maybe you thought about the first two. He came to serve, to seek and to save the lost. He came for those things. And it's interesting because the first two tell us of Jesus' purpose, but the last one tells us of his primary method. He came to seek and to save the lost, to serve, not to be served. And his method of doing that was eating. Does this excite anybody else? I mean, in the Daniel plan, we're talking about all the stuff we're supposed to eat and can't eat. But I'm telling you this morning, we need to just eat and enjoy food. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, how often can you go to church and the preacher tells you, go out and eat, okay? So, and that's what I'm going to tell you this morning. We need to be eating. As I was thinking about this, I then went back, and this week I started looking at all the times that Jesus ate with people or food was found in just the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I looked up all the references to food, so eating, drinking, bread, wine, the banquet table, dining, dinner invitation, all those things. Do you realize there was over 400 and some verses just in the Gospels that talk about food or eating? Did you realize it's in there that much? And there are 10 specific times in which the Gospels tell us about Jesus' eating habits. Now, obviously, those 10 times, they had a lot of those verses in there. But 10 specific times that we find Jesus eating with people. So I want to look at those 10 times this morning for just a moment, because I think we can learn a little bit about eating with people from Jesus' own example. So here's the first one. Jesus attends a wedding party. John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. I mean no disrespect by this, but Jesus was no stick-in-the-mud type of guy. People liked having him around. And the very first time we see Jesus in active ministry, he is at a wedding party. And I do not believe Jesus was off in the corner at this wedding party going like this. I think Jesus was there dancing, partying, having a good time. Now, he didn't sin, but he was having a good time with everybody else was there. I don't know where at in the church we started to get this concept that if you're having fun, it must be of the devil. We sort of get that in the church. It was sort of interesting a couple of years ago, quite a few years ago now. I was actually going to a funeral. It was on the far side of the Twin Cities. I took three ladies. It was a senior person, and so I took three ladies with me who were good friends with this guy. We went clear out to this funeral on the far side of the cities. On the way home, I wanted to stop by a younger guy that was coming to our church at the time who lived on the far side. I wanted to stop by his house, so I ended up having to drive south of the cities, and I came by this place called Valley Fair Amusement Park. Now, it's actually a subsidiary of Cedar Fair Amusements, which owns Cedar Point, so it's a sister park to Cedar Point. And as we drove by the park, as we were coming up to it, every time I drive by amusement, my heart just sort of races. You know, I'm like, I like amusement parks. I like all the thrills and rides and stuff. And it was really cool because as the highway that went along the park, the biggest roller coaster was right along the highway, and then sticking out of the tree line, you could see the other rides sticking up, and it was in the winter, so they weren't running. And so you could see the other rides, and they were sandwiched between the highway and the Minnesota River. And as we were driving up to the amusement park, one of the ladies in the car, and she was a really fun lady who just liked to live life to the full. She's like, oh, the memories of going to the amusement park. I remember taking my kids on this roller coaster and getting my daughter sick on this roller coaster. And she's just sharing about all these memories that was associated with the amusement park. And then all of a sudden, I thought a fight was going to break out in my car amongst old ladies. Because from the front seat, I had another lady, and as this lady was sharing her fond memories, she turned around and she said, that's of the devil.
only worldly people go to amusement parks. It's the devil's playground. And she just started going off. I thought the other lady in the back of my car was going to reach up and pop her in the back of the head. I was like, oh my goodness, you know. I don't know where we get this concept that we got a feeling that if it's fun, it must be of the devil. It's not true. The very first time we see Jesus, he is at a wedding party. Did you see that? Did you hear that? It's amazing. Here is Jesus standing or partying, having a good time with the bride and groom, celebrating in the festivities. And then later on, we see the big burly disciples, another picture of Jesus, and people are wanting to bring their kids to Jesus, and the big burly disciples that don't like to have any fun, stick in the mud, they're like, keep those kids away from Jesus. And Jesus is like, no, let the little kids come to me. And I don't think Jesus just was sitting there like the pictures, you know, having the kids get up on his lap and like Santa Claus, you know? I think Jesus was probably playing a little ring around Rosie with them. He was having a good time with them, and then he began to bless them. You know what I get from these pictures of Jesus? People liked having him around. He was not a stick-in-the-mud type of religious guy. He was a fun man that you would have enjoyed getting to know and enjoyed having him at your party. Let's move on. Another instance where Jesus is eating. Jesus has dinner at two tax collectors' home. You know what? I forgot. I have a really good video. Candy, let's throw that video, because I think some people, this might be how they think people should come to their home for religious dinners. So let's throw that video up. I don't think people would have felt that way around Jesus. I think he would have just been right in there with the thick of everybody else, having a good time. And we see this. Let's move on to the next time we see Jesus eating. He eats at two tax collectors' homes. So the two tax collectors, Matthew, Levi, and also Zacchaeus. We know Levi by another name because he wrote one of the Gospels, and he wrote about his experiences with Jesus, and his name was Matthew. When Jesus saw Matthew, he told him, pick up your tax collector's table. I'm coming over to your house, and we're going to have dinner together. I'm going to eat with you. And we see this scene unfolds, and it explodes into accusation and innuendo and disgust by the religious leaders. Mark chapter 2, verse 16 through 17. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and the tax collectors, they asked his disciples, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? This was not an isolated occurrence, by the way, of Jesus eating with the disreputes of society of those days. There were at least two other occasions in which the religious leaders got upset or disgusted about the people that Jesus ate with. In another situation, there was a hated tax collector, and he was a wee little man. He was named Zacchaeus, and Zacchaeus had climbed up in a tree because he was so short he wanted to see above the crowds. And as Jesus walked by, he saw Zacchaeus up there, told him to come down because I'm coming over to your house. We're going to have a party. Bring all your friends. We're going to eat. I want to come over to your home. And so they gathered at his house. This practice of Jesus became so common that Jesus began to gain a reputation. Do you have a reputation? Jesus had a reputation. Let me read to you his reputation. Matthew, one of those tax collectors, wrote about Jesus' reputation in Matthew 11:19. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, here's the reputation, here is a glutton and a drunker, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Now, it's sort of interesting because, you see, the religious leaders meant that as a negative. But when you read it in Matthew's gospel and the other gospel accounts, they actually see this as a positive because here's the way they viewed it. Jesus is a friend of everyday people. He's a friend of people who are far from him. A friend of people who are not fitting in religious society and religious culture. He's somebody that can be your friend. Can you imagine Matthew writing that? If he came to my house, he can come to your house. They saw it as a positive. Now, here was the one that surprised me. Let's go on. Jesus has dinner at two Pharisees' homes. And I sort of forgot that, and frankly, I found it surprising. I had forgotten that Jesus actually accepted an invitation to religious leaders' homes. Now, the instance is, when you read both of these accounts, they were sort of bringing Jesus over to their home so that they could accuse him, so that they could trap him and have something to shoot him for and get upset over him with. And it's interesting because Jesus actually turns the scenario around and situation around and begins to actually sort of chew on them for the way that they practice their religion and the way that they specifically eat and how they eat. Now, eating was a very established system in Jesus' day for both the Romans and the Jews. There were many social rules governing in which the way people were supposed to eat. Today, we have those rules too. You can even go to school to learn these rules. You can go to etiquette school. And etiquette school describes how you're to eat with other people. And etiquette actually defines the whole process of a dinner engagement. So it starts clear on the front end. How do you invite people? Who do you invite? How do you seat them when they get here? How should the table settings be set? And it goes all the way to the end of the dinner, you know, that you should send thank yous for dinners after the fact. Now, how many of you send thank yous when you get stuff? It's proper etiquette that you send out some thank yous. And it's interesting because Jesus in his day had the same kind of etiquette going on. The Jews had very specific etiquette about who you should and should not eat with. Now, outside of your immediate family, for the Jews, the big taboo, the big no-no, is that you do not eat with somebody that's not of the same Jewish status that you are. So the religious leaders would eat with religious leaders and the political leaders with the Jewish political leaders. And, you know, then you had the structures all the way down, fishermen with fishermen, businessmen with businessmen. But the big taboo is you don't bring over somebody that's not Jew to your house. That's a no-no. You don't do that. That's that. That crosses the line because you may become unclean. And when you become unclean, you can no longer go to church or tabernacle for them or synagogue. You can no longer go to church. You can no longer worship. And so you did not bring somebody over that was of another faith or was a heathen or a pagan or a Samaritan. Now, it's interesting because the Romans had very much the same kind of etiquette customs in their culture as well. While sin issues were not the factor in the equation for their social standings and who comes over to dinner, social status for the Roman was everything. And so the rich would never eat with the poor. A Roman higher soldier, like a leader of a battalion or a legion, would never eat with the common soldier. A master would never, ever eat with the slave or his hired hand. And so in Roman culture, it wasn't sin issues, it was social status issue. And you had to stay in your social status place with the people that you ate. And you never stepped out of that custom to eat with somebody else of a different class. It just was unheard of in Roman society. So when Jesus ate with the Pharisees in Luke chapter 14, he addresses this whole established pattern of etiquette and social order. And he actually began laying the foundation for something that was to follow suit in the church as a whole. Here's what it says. When he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor. For a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this person your seat. Then, humiliated, you'll have to take the least important place. But when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. And then Jesus said the unthinkable.
When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So here Jesus is laying out a new social order which blew the minds of both the Jews and the Romans. He got them both, got both sides. And he said, you have to look beyond the surface stuff. Don't just look at your neighbors and, oh, that neighbor has a lot of fun toys that someday I may want to borrow, so I'm going to invite them over for burgers. Jesus says, don't look at the social stuff. Don't look at the social status. Don't look at whether they're well-to-do or not to do at all. Look at the heart instead. And this concept blew the doors off the church, the early church, because only in the church did you have people that were willing to eat with anybody. Jesus was not afraid of taking hits for breaking social etiquette when it came to ministry. In fact, right after this instance in Luke 15, a bunch of tax collectors and sinners are now hanging around Jesus and gathering with him and eating with him. And Jesus was the rabbi of higher status. He was the more educated and the well-learned guy in the group. And yet he was hanging out and having dinner with the lowest people, with the non-socialites, if you will, the sinners. And oh, Lord help us, the non-Jews. And the Pharisees of the teachers of the law began to mutter against him. It says, this man welcomes sinners and he eats with them. One of the distinguishing marks of the early church was their breaking of social etiquette norms in the way in which they hosted and invited people over for dinner parties. In fact, even the Roman Emperor Julian noted that one of the despised things about these so-called Christians was their love feasts or the gathering of tables. He was disgusted by the breaking of customs and the manner of who they welcomed to the table and would eat at their table. Because when the Christians gathered together for dinner or for food, a socialite may eat with the disrepute. A master may be eating with a slave, which would have been a hideous thing in Roman culture, but a Samaritan soldier may also be eating with a Jew. And they all gather around the table as equals. And it was very fascinating because in this culture, in this church, you had slaves for the first time in their lives being treated with respect, and their masters would even serve them. And you had masters who lived well-to-do all throughout their lives actually coming alongside and serving the least of these and the slaves, only in the church. And this models Jesus' own life. You remember that instance when Jesus came into the room and there's nobody else to wash feet, and that was the lowest slave's job. Can you imagine having to wash feet if you wore sandals and the toe jam that you would get and the stuff that would grow in there? It's the lowest of the lowest jobs. And when Jesus came in looking around, he saw nobody else to do that job. And what did Jesus do? Took off his outer stuff, put maybe a servant's robe on to keep himself a little bit clean, got a bowl and a basin and started to wash feet because it was a job that needed done. Jesus came to serve even the least of these. A couple more occasions. Jesus feeds people. So the first couple instances, people were feeding Jesus. He was going over to somebody's house and they were giving him food, you know, the wedding party, the tax collectors, even the Pharisees, they were providing Jesus. So he was the guest. But it's interesting because Jesus actually fed other people too. In fact, there's three occasions where Jesus feeds other people, 5,000, 4,000, and then the disciples after the resurrection. So let's take a look at these. The next big eating event was the feeding of the 5,000. A bunch of people were gathered around. They were in a remote place. Jesus looks around and says, huh, everybody's hungry. We're having a great time with teaching and a great time of worship today. Disciples, give them food. And they're all like, huh? There's 5,000 people here. Now, I know some of you have the gift of hospitality, but that would be like me coming to you and saying, you know, Diane, can you help me feed 5,000 people? We have a big funeral this weekend. Huh? And that's what the disciples did. And Jesus says, oh, come on, guys, what do you got? And so they find some food, and Jesus says, that's enough. And all of a sudden, he starts to miraculously multiply the fish and the loaves and feeds 5,000 people.
And then after that, a little bit later, the same thing happens. The disciples, I mean, we're talking maybe in time frame a month or two. In Scripture, it's just about two chapters later. The same scenario happens. Jesus is teaching. They're in a remote place. Things are going really well. Jesus says, feed them. And they're like, we don't have enough food. It would cost a lot of money for us to feed all these people. And Jesus says, what do you got? Well, we got some bread and loaves. He's like, let me have them. And then they're like, oh, that's right, you know. And Jesus comes over, multiplies it, and again, feeds 4,000 people. The last instance of this taking place, where Jesus is the one feeding people, after his death and resurrection, Jesus meets the disciples on the Sea of Galilee. They're out fishing. They've been fishing all night long. They haven't caught anything. They're disgusted, dirty, and discouraged. I don't know, anybody fish? Is it a bad day when you get no fish? Well, not really. Some days it's just nice to still be out there, okay? But it's good to catch fish. And these guys had caught nothing. Jesus said, I tell you what, throw your nets on the other side of the boat. He calls out from the shore. They do it. They catch a whole horde of fish. As they're cleaning up that mess, trying to get into shore, Jesus makes a fire, and he starts cooking them breakfast. And he feeds the disciples. Probably feeds them some fish. I don't want to stretch this too far, but I think there's a truth here about life and eating that we can learn. When we eat with people, we tend to let our guard down. And it's at those moments that really we can begin to share our hearts with other people. Because in each of these instances, feeding the 5,000, 4,000, Jesus was doing some very heavy lifting as far as teaching's concerned. And so he feeds them, their hearts and their stomachs are full, and now Jesus is also able to help send the message even further home that he's trying to get across. In this last instance, where Jesus makes a little bonfire and feeds them breakfast, feeds the disciples breakfast, the very next situation that John tells us about, because John's the one that writes about that, the very next situation is that Jesus confronts Peter about his love and says, do you really love me? Because remember, Peter denied Jesus. And this is Peter's now restoration back to faith. And it is through food that Peter's heart is open, and Jesus opens the door to walk in and begin to talk to Peter's heart and the very thing that's probably bothering him the most. Do you love me? Then feed my sheep, feed my lambs. Eating opens up the door for us to really go deeper with other people. It lets our guards down, and it just brings us into a camaraderie with other people. Here's another instance where Jesus was eating with somebody, Luke chapter 10. At first round, I actually missed this little dinner. But in Luke chapter 10, we find that when Jesus enters a small village that we know is Bethany, here in this village are some close friends of his, Mary and Martha and Lazarus. You might remember Lazarus was the guy that Jesus raised from the dead. Well, Martha meets Jesus and his band of people and disciples, and she invites them all over to her house for supper. I've done that to Michelle a few times. She doesn't really appreciate it. Have any of you other guys done that? You invited somebody over and then you told your wife, oh, by the way, so-and-so's coming and they'll be here in about 15 minutes. Is that okay? Well, Martha goes about the house. She actually made the invitation, so it should be okay. And she goes over to the house. She's freaking out, trying to keep everybody happy and making all the food and cleaning everything. And her lazy sister is just sitting there on the floor in front of Jesus. So Martha comes winging in as she's passing from kitchen to dining room table or something. And she runs in. She says, Jesus, chew my sister out because she ain't helping with anything. And Jesus looks down, looks at Martha and says, I'm sorry, but she's actually chosen the better thing, Martha. Just sitting at my feet, being present with me as I'm here. She chose the better thing. Now, there's a couple lessons that I gleaned from this story. First off, one, if we've invited somebody over, the height of glory or favor is when they invite us back. And we should take them up on it. If you've done something nice for somebody, if you've invited them over and they say, well, we'd love to have you come over, the worst thing you could do is, I'm not going to go over to your house. It's fine for you to come to mine, but I've seen some of your food. I'm not going to do it. Okay? No, we should. Go ahead and extend and come back to the invitation. But the other thing is, remember, this is a wonderful truth. When you're eating, don't let the food and the prep and all the other stuff distract you from what's really important. What's really important is being present with who's there. That was Jesus' lesson here. Mary, she's chosen to be present. Just be present when you have food. And here's the last time we see Jesus eating.
TV is filled with hundreds of baking shows these days. Everyone wants to share their favorite recipe and menu. I think that set the internet on fire when it first started getting going, was the ability to share recipes. And now, not only did Jesus accept dinner invitations, not only did he throw some dinner parties and invite people over to eat, but he also set out the greatest menu that we have ever enjoyed. As Jesus' ministry was winding down, one of the last meals was with his friends. And Jesus said of this meal from Luke chapter 22, "I have eagerly desired to eat the Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you, I will not eat it again until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom." And then during the meal, this was the recipe Jesus pulled out and the menu items that he began to give to the disciples. After taking the cup, he gave thanks and he said, "Take this, divide it amongst you. For I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." And he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup and said, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." The communion meal was to be this ever-present reminder of Christ's life, and specifically the way in which Christ lived his life, the way that he treated other people. Well, later the Apostle Paul would actually blast the Corinthian church because they had turned communion upside down. The meal was there to be shared amongst the church. It was to be an example to the world of how Christ unifies all people. And yet in this Corinthian church, they had started to revert back to their old ways. The rich folks and the well-to-do in the church were eating together, and the not-so-well-to-do people in the church had to eat over there. And some people, they were being missed in eating, and other people were showing up early because they got the best food, and so they wanted the drumstick, not the white junky meat, you know. So they were getting there early, and they were going ahead and eating ahead of everybody else. And all of a sudden, in this Corinthian church, where everybody was supposed to be equal under the banner of Jesus Christ, all of a sudden, divisions were beginning to happen because some were being left out. Some were being treated with favoritism. Some were acting all haughty. And Paul rebukes these Corinthian people. "For whenever you eat this bread," he said, "and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. So then whoever eats the bread and drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of sinning against the body and the blood of the Lord. Everyone ought to examine themselves before they eat of the bread and drink of the cup." The author of the book that we're using over here, so there's a couple extra copies if people want them, Michael Frost. Here's what he said about this incident. I thought it was fascinating. "Paul seems to believe that observing the habit of remembering the sacrifice of Christ every time they eat will countermand the impulse to exclude the poor or the outsider. When he instructs they examine themselves before they eat and drink, he is asking them not to search the deepest recesses of their heart for any unremembered or unconfessed sin, but rather to consider who they've excluded from their tables. In other words, the habitual practice of the love feast or communion was to be an incubator in which Christians learned to accept the outsider, offer generosity to the poor, and have fellowship with those so-called lower ranks. As Paul concludes, "So then, my brothers and sisters, when you gather to eat, you should all eat together. Our love feast should teach us how to practice hospitality throughout the week, and not only by inviting well-mannered Christian folks into our home, but also including unbelievers or the poor to sit around your table." So who's sitting at your table? Who's sitting at your table? In the normal course of the week, unless you're a hobbit and you have about 6 or 7 meals a day, you know, you have first breakfast, second breakfast, and third breakfast, unless you have a bunch of meals, most of us eat 3 meals a day. And so do the math. How many meals a week are you eating? Okay, 21. All right, 21 meals. Out of those 21 meals, I want you to take a moment, pull out the bulletin, find a blank piece of paper, grab a pen. I want you just for about 30 seconds, think back through your last week. Who was sitting around your table? Who was sitting there? Okay, go ahead, start writing. Don't look at me now, write it down. Y'all still looking at me, write it down. Who was sitting at your table over this last week? My family, they're gonna be there, work people. Don't forget work.
If you eat it, your lunch and you're at work, okay, there might be some people sitting there. Maybe at leisure time, if you went out to eat, you know, you did an Olive Garden thing and you took some friends with you. Yeah, your family members. Don't forget church. Did you have a meal here at church? Celebrate recovery. You better have all your celebrate friends there, right? Because we eat together every Monday night. Go ahead, write it down. Think through that. Who was at your table this last week? Y'all writing it down, right? Got it in your mind? Who was at your table? Jesus in the early church was very intentional about who was at their tables. They didn't let social pressure dictate who sat at their table, but rather they let a burden for ministry. They let a burden to be a witness for Christ be their guide. So the early church, they intentionally brought around their table people who were far from Christ, people who were close to Christ so they could grow and be discipled together. They were very intentional about who they ate with. Who did you eat with this last week? And here's my challenge for this coming week. I want to challenge you to intentionally eat with three people this week, one of which is not a follower of Christ, not a follower of Christ or attending church. For this challenge, I want to move outside of your family. So family meals don't count, okay? Well, every week, you know, I have a family of 20 people, so we eat together. Now, family doesn't count. Who outside of your household did you eat with this last week? The challenge is eat with three people, one of which, as far as you know, does not go to church or is not a Christian. Now, this may seem really difficult. It may freak a few of you out. It may be like, oh, I can't do that, you know, eating with all those people. But I want you to remember, it's not that difficult. I'm challenging you to eat with intention is what I'm challenging you to do. And for a lot of you, you eat lunch at work with a bunch of people. That all counts. If you have one meal at church, well, you're taking care of that one as well. I'm just asking you to be intentional about who you eat with. And you can cheat. I'll give you a cheat. You want to cheat? You can invite three people over for one meal and you taking care of it for the whole week. Ain't that great? Come on, you didn't like that cheat? I thought that was a good cheat, you know? Because I'm thinking I got a busy week and I had a one-shot deal, all righty. I want you to be intentional about this, and I want you to be intentional about it for Christ. Now, don't, how do I want to put this? Don't bring these people over to be your pet project. I just want to give that little warning. Because people can see through that in a heartbeat. And if the only reason you're bringing them over isn't because you really like them, because I really don't like them, you know, and I don't have any intention of trying to like them, you know, I'm just doing it to be a good Christian, they become your project. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about inviting some people over so you can get to know them, so you can begin to befriend them, so you can actually be a good neighbor. So don't make them your project. You're doing this to be intentional. I also don't expect you to get in their face, you know, okay, if you want the next course, you have to accept Christ now. Okay, that's all I'm talking about. All right, I'm not saying you have to get in their face about evangelism stuff. Here's the deal. I want you to simply invite them over so you can get to know them a little bit so that you can have opportunity to be Jesus with them. So you can just live out your normal Christian life before them. As I was thinking about this week, this one is one that actually affects me. If I go about my normal week, I hang around Christians all week long. In fact, it's interesting, you pay me to do that. You pay me to hang around the church to be your pastor. And so a long time ago, I learned that if I just go about my normal life, I'm going to be hanging around church people all the time. And so I learned I need to be intentional about this in my life. And so I've gotten involved in PTOs, I've gotten involved in Boy Scouts. Right now I've gotten involved with Valley City Community Group, which those folks are just a blast, by the way. So I'm having a good time with those folks, just so I am with people that don't go to church. Otherwise, if I just went about my normal life, I'd be with you all the time. And a few years ago, it dawned on me, I don't want to go into those situations and the Joe evangelist in there and get all over their case about their non-Christianness or whatnot. I want to be just a normal person before them, but I also want to share Jesus Christ. So a question that I always ask myself when I walk out of those situations, how did I shine for Jesus Christ? And would they know that I'm any different than anybody else just by the way that I lived before them? And I don't have to get all up in their grill about their faith. And I don't have to get all over them about, you know, well, you're doing that? Oh, that's not a good idea, you know. How was I still shining for Christ in that situation with them? Because one of the things we can tend to do, and this is the problem with friendship evangelism, we can become so much friends that we forget the evangelism part. We're there because we are intentionally wanting to shine for Jesus Christ with the people that we're around. And so that's my challenge to you this week. Three people that you intentionally eat with during the week, just so that you can be Jesus Christ before them. You can live out your faith before them. And what's interesting is I think as we begin to intentionally do this, we'll begin to find all sorts of doors opening up for us. In the book that we're reading with this series here, it ended the chapter with a fascinating story I want to share with you. The author said that he met a Southern Baptist minister in Portland. And he told about him and his neighbors, and he told about his neighbor's claim that his one neighbor made the best margaritas in all of Oregon. And he regularly hosted a margarita and poker night in his garage. All the men from the neighborhood attended, but the Baptist pastor never accepted an invitation to join them, believing this to be a strong witness to his faith. When the author heard this, he asked the pastor how many times his neighbor had asked him any questions about his faith. Well, never. He then asked him how often he had ever shared anything of his faith with his margarita-making pastor neighbor, or neighbor. And again, the answer was, well, never. You see, it's not unquestionable, the author says, when a Baptist pastor refuses to attend a margarita and poker night. It's expected. And so the author then challenged this pastor to accept the next invitation he received, and he took him up on it. His neighbor nearly fell over in shock. The Baptist minister joined the gathering in the garage, and true to his convictions, he just drank soda, and you know what? No one minded. He ended up having more conversations about his faith than he had in ages. The Baptist pastor at the margarita night was surprised. It evoked questions. So all I'm asking you to do is invite three people over to eat with you, and then just be Jesus before them. And as you launch out in this, you might actually find they will reciprocate the invitation, and you might actually find you will have opportunity to share Jesus Christ with them. Michelle and I learned something. I'm just going to throw this in here. Michelle and I learned something. We had no idea what a neighborhood crawl is. Anybody else have an idea what a neighborhood crawl is? Okay, some of you do. We found out what a neighborhood crawl is. By the end of the night, they're so drunk, they're crawling home. Michelle and I went, and halfway through the night, they're soused. They're pulling out beads for the ladies and stuff. I'm like, oh, no. This isn't, you know, ooh, this ought to be interesting. It was the most fun Michelle and I have had with our neighbors since we lived there. And you know what? We didn't drink, and they didn't think we were weird for not drinking. They actually started sharing with us their lives. We found out that one neighbor's house a few years ago had an FBI standoff because a guy killed everybody in the house. And our whole neighborhood was shut down for 3 days. And I'm like, oh, grand! So glad I came tonight to learn that story. That's being Jesus. And I'm not putting myself on a pedestal, but that's what we're called to be, church. We're not to be so strange and set off that everybody thinks we're a little weird. But we're to be with the world. Be in the world, but not of the world. I'm not calling you to sin and do sinful things. But we need to be in the world so that we can shine for Jesus Christ. Will you take me up on that challenge? From here until Easter, will you intentionally eat with three people each week through Easter, up to Easter? It could be at work. It could be inviting them over for a dinner. It could be going out to lunch with somebody. A neighbor sitting next to you at Applebee's doesn't count, okay? Well, we went to Applebee's and we had people sitting next to us. No, that didn't count, okay? You invited them. But will you take them up on that? Now, we have this really neat little tool that I want us to use here this morning. There it is. I got to find my tool. Okay, y'all got one of these when you came in? On the inside, oh yeah, the leaves, use the leaf, put that on the gratitude tree. On the inside, oh, I ripped it off. On the inside, you find a little flap. It's a connection card. You can rip that off very easily. It's perforated. And on the back of that, I had one. Here it is. Okay. On the back of the card, you'll see a checkup from last week. I told you that was going to happen. Did you bless three people? How did you bless them? In what way? And right below that, the challenge for this week. I will intentionally eat with three people this week, one of which does not go to church, in order that Christ may be displayed through me. If you're willing to take me up on that challenge as best you can, just check that. Mark that off, and then drop this in the offering plate in just a moment. I would like to see what God's going to do as we begin to intentionally eat. A wonderful thing we all get to do, we intentionally eat with other people.